Okay,
Pocho. And we're back.
We are back. And what beer did you pick? Oh, the Oberon. It's baseball season. That means Oberon's for sale.
It comes out of baseball season?
They don't sell it before the first opening day.
Ah, I didn't know.
All the better reason to like Oberon.
Yes.
All right. So you want to go right into the Amazon Anonymous?
Do you want to?
Sure, let's do this.
We've been just looking at it, so you might as well. So I think we each have two things we're going to pick out. I'll start.
Okay.
Somebody brought a whole bunch of cool Weber grill stuff, but the thing I want to focus on is chimney starter.
Oh yeah. Okay.
If you have a grill, or if you like doing any charcoal grilling, then you must get a chimney starter. It is the best way to make your coals hot, quick, efficiently, and awesomely.
Without chemical.
You can do it without chemical. You can do the Alton Brown thing where you put a little oil on some newspaper or something underneath it to...
You really don't even need the oil on the newspaper, but I forgot he does that. You know, I just stick some newspaper underneath the chimney, light it, and let the chimney... Yeah, chimney starters are really good. Everyone should get one. If you're the guy that puts lighter fluid in your grill and then throws a match in, look at chimney starters. They're only $14.99 on Amazon with free shipping.
Yeah, this is... It's an awesome, awesome thing to have if you're doing grilling. So highly recommended. I mean, everything that he bought looked awesome, but this was the thing that I felt like needed to be pointed out. If you're ever doing any charcoal grilling, get yourself a chimney starter. Totally worth it. Will pay for itself time and time again. Good. In terms of time.
Pretty much the classic Weber he bought, but has the coal, like airflow and coal emptying thing on the bottom. $149 for the grill. Maybe it was a she. Because ladies can barbecue, right?
Anyone can barbecue. Everyone should barbecue if you have the room for it. But what was yours?
I'm going to have to go with the very top thing on my list here. The please use other door left arrow and the matching please use other door right arrow.
You took my other one.
Did I? Oh, I'll just take the left arrow and you can take the right arrow.
Yeah,
they're kind of a set pair, right?
Yeah.
And there's like a don't block the door one further down. But I really like how these left and right arrows are right beside each other.
Yeah.
So someone, it looks like, you know, a restaurant type thing where there's two doors where it says please use other door. And yeah, he bought one of the left arrow. For $3.99, and he bought one of the right arrow, which I presume is also $3.99. I'm not going to look that up.
This is what I like the most about this, and the reason why I wanted to why I wanted to say it is, I guess, as much as you did. Well, there are two reasons. One, it's seemingly random, right? I mean, it's like people are also buying, you know, grills and phones, and somebody buys stickers, but also it shows you, like, you can get all this crap on Amazon, and you can support us just by, you know, buying your little
doohickeys. The pairs are frequently brought together for $7.98. Yeah.
If you just buy your little doohickeys, even just those little dumb doohickeys, that helps
like
us.
50 cents, yeah.
Yeah. So thanks.
Yes, thank you. All right, what's your... Come on, you have another second one you would like to pick?
There's a notice, do not block door.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the same guy bought that.
Probably
one
the
too.
Same person brought that. Well, you do your second one. I'll see if I can find one.
Oh, let's see. I didn't really have the one picked out. There's just so many good things here. Let's go with... What is this? Is this good stuff? No. Someone bought... Oh, wait. No, we already did that one.
Okay. Well, we'll do more other time. Let's leave them wanting more.
Leave them wanting more. Okay, so here's a question. Someone bought a TomTom GPS with lifetime map updates.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that standalone GPSs still have, you know, I can see how they, if you're like a taxi driver or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can see how there's a market for that. And maybe, you know, maybe you're a truck driver. Okay. So I guess there's, yeah, there's a lot of people that drive for their livelihood. But if you're not driving for your livelihood, I guess there's people that don't want to have the data plan and the smartphone and stuff. So, okay, there's still a market. I take back this whole thing that I was going to start on. I'm thinking everyone has an iPhone, but
yeah, everyone has a smartphone. Not really.
No, okay. I got gotcha. Really. I'm not even going to go there. So, but it has a hidden price. You have to add it to your cart to see the price. Someone got a really good deal on the TomTom Start 55TM 5-inch GPS Navigator with lifetime traffic and maps and roadside assistance.
Okay, then I will point out that somebody bought the Pinzon Basics Egyptian Cotton 725-gram 6-piece towel set. Look nice. Looks like a nice towel set. Guess if you need towels, there you go. Towels. Everybody needs towels.
Everyone needs towels. Egyptian cotton. I hear that's good stuff, but I don't know anything about it. Is it live up to the hype?
The product description says, indulge yourself in spa-like luxury with this luxurious 6-piece towel set. Use luxury twice in the same sentence.
Oh, someone bought a 2-year subscription to Popular Science. That's not spoiling anything, but that's good. Popular Science is a good magazine. What is this? A DVD from 1998. Welcome to Whoop Whoop.
It looks like it's a sort of a cult movie that
gets 4 out of 5 stars with 48 customer reviews. New York con man is trapped in a bizarre marriage and flees across the Australian desert pursued by his wife and father-in-law.
Oh, okay. So do you remember a movie called Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
Yeah, I remember the title.
It was this indie movie about these... drag queens riding across Australia, and
okay.
the lead character, the lead actor was the same guy who was Mr. Smith in the Matrix movies.
Okay.
And so I guess this is the follow up, according to somebody. So, but okay. But that was a well recognized and well loved movie. So this looks like it's, you know, it's a movie lover. Somebody mm-hmm. who really likes movies, who wanted to see
the reviews are very
polarized.
Polarized, yes. You got, well, people are probably hating it for bad reasons, like talking about shame on animal abuse. Too many scenes of disturbing animal abuse. The film begins with a disclaimer: no animals were hurt during the making of the film. Then it continues with various scenes of hillbilly glee over dead kangaroos as roadkill and dog food. Fun. I had to turn my head away. Also, the portrayal of the country folk is stereotypical and offensive. That's the best review ever, actually. Mm. Thank you, Tyrone Mansfield.
They should put that in the box.
By Tyrone Mansfield, 1 star.
Well, it looks like probably a good movie. If I were into movies, which unfortunately I'm not, I'm more of a TV guy. If I were into movies, then
Welcome to
that would be one of the ones I would want to watch. So...
Oh, you were talking about, look at that, Amazon right top right. May the 4th be with you, right? Yeah. There's Yoda.
Yeah. It's internet. I expect nothing less.
Internet. Damn you, internet.
When will you stop disappointing me, internet?
But isn't that part of the reason you're on the internet, so you can be disappointed by the internet?
Disappointed and often, frankly... surprised and pleased. The internet does a great job, and it also is, it's like that little redheaded girl with the curls, right? When it's good, it's very, very good. When it's bad, very, very bad. Jeff is now opening up his pickled hop shoots. Hopped pickled hop shoots. So, now you should explain what hop shoots are. They're the...
When they start growing out of the ground, after you train your 5 or so strongest hop leads, you trim the rest off so it focuses all the growing energy into the 5 that are trained. So these are ones that were just growing up that I snipped off And I only kept the top 4 or 5 or so inches. Mm-hmm. Because after that, they get kind of woody and more prickly. So I only took the tenderest part. And like I said, I explained earlier how I pickled them. What do you think?
They're nice. They'd be a nice little side dish or something to.
Yeah,
a larger meal.
I mean, like when you have the pickly garnish thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these aren't really something you eat straight, but you know, toss them on a salad or something like that.
Or even better, I think is sort of an aperitif in between. So mm-hmm. like you have some stuff. You have like a nice. It's a nice salad or something, and then you would take a hop shoots, you know, 2 apple hop shoots, but then you do your entree.
I was mentioning, Greg, before we start recording, I think these would be good on, like, mozzarella, like fresh mozzarella or something like that.
Yeah, that would probably work. I wouldn't add them to things. I think they're best as sort of a
oh, you like them on their own?
I think they're best on their own. You know, if you wanted to add mozzarella to them, that's fine, but I wouldn't like, mm-hmm. you know, put this in a sandwich or add okay. these to a salad or something like that. I think they're best.
Yeah, when I made them before, when they weren't hopped, that's what I kind of used them like pickles. I put them on sandwiches and things like that. And that was, I think it worked out pretty well when I used cider vinegar and didn't hop them. But these ones, they have a little more nuance on their own. They have the hop flavor to them.
Yeah, it'd actually be nice in a beer meal. If you were doing like mm-hmm. a beer meal, that'd be nice in between.
Yeah, certainly, because. You know, especially after something heavy, right? Because then it wouldn't be so
mm-hmm.
acidic and bitter all at once, right? So if you have something heavy, you could have this kind of, and people's palates would be ready for it. It would be a good aperitif after maybe like a fatty, like appetizer or something like that.
You're gassy today. I just wanted to point that out.
The CO2 burpee gassy. I'm not farting.
Yeah.
Stinking up the room or anything. Lots of highly carbonated beers, apparently. But yep, so I'm happy with how they turned out.
No, I think they turned out very well. The reason I don't want more is because I don't want to make noises on the...
Sure.
I may have one after. But no, they're pretty good.
I'm glad you like them standalone. Actually, when I pickled them, I left some cascades in the top. And I actually took those out after I tasted them because I thought it was hoppy enough and maybe a little too hoppy.
Mm-hmm.
So I took those out. And maybe it's kind of equal, you know, a little bit of equilibrium, and it's not quite as hoppy as I remember from last time I had them. So.
I wonder what happens. I mean, obviously, I mean, hops.
So I had pickled hop cones too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's probably just ridiculous.
It's probably very acidic and sour and bitter.
What if you were to? No, that wouldn't even work too. Because I was going to say, what if you were to age them? When you could age hop cones, but really what they get is they lose all their acidity and they're just kind of cheesy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That probably wouldn't pickle very well.
Yeah.
It's just not a good pickling because some things just don't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually had some hops that I forgot to reseal and they were in the fridge and I smelled them and they had no aroma left to them, you know, and I threw those out and I opened a new bag. Vacuum sealed bag, and they still smelled bright and fresh. And those are the ones I just used a pinch of to put in here.
That was out. That was the one that was out there that I saw.
It
was an open bag out.
Oh, the one that's out there. That's the okay. I didn't throw it out. That's the one that has no aroma. It's the one you saw. I'm going to throw it out because there's no.
Could you use that for like a lambic or something?
I could if I wanted to brew a lambic.
Mm-hmm. That's what you would use. That's what they use. They use old hops. That have
I mean, those hops are still green. I actually got some brown cascades in the freezer that I won at a homebrew club competition. Well, it was a raffle thing, and my ticket was drawn at the very end, and I had a couple rusty bolts or a bag of brown hops, and I took the bag of brown hops. So I still got those too. I should just throw them out.
What, I mean, you want them to be green, right? You don't want them to be brown.
They still have some bittering, you know, character to them. You know, I was talking with Keith when I won them. He's like, oh, they're still okay. So, I don't know. I'm like, because I made a comment about brewing a lambic or something. No, you can still brew normal beer with those or something like that is what he says. Now, granted, that was like 5 years ago, and they're still in my freezer, mm-hmm. so.
I don't think we ever put up the hot picking show, did we?
Didn't we? I have it. I found it when I was cleaning off the Zooms. So I got hot picking, but I had a recollection that we did put it up. So I wasn't sure, but if you don't think it's up
I don't
there,
think we ever put it up.
Okay. We can put it up. We can throw it in the post show.
I don't extras. Know. It was a fun night. We just drank some beers. And
it's 2 hours and 45 yeah, minutes of...
of us bullshitting like a year ago. It was...
August. Not a year yet.
Almost. It was... I remember it being a fun night.
Okay. Yeah, I found it when I was cleaning off the Zooms from Beer Week, and I got it here, and I didn't delete it, because I'm like, huh, it's still on the Zoom. But I thought I put it up, because I remember... I thought I remembered a title, Hop Pickin', you know, with ending in an N. So I had a recollection that we put that up.
But. I mean, it's definitely an extras feed thing. It's not a main feed thing, but it's... Mm-hmm.
Oh, certainly an extras thing.
Yeah.
3 hours of us just drinking beer, picking hops, and bullshitting. And a lot of it was about politics, right?
Because there was politics.
Election was coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that would be kind of dated at this point.
Yeah, it's dated. It's but that's, you know, that would be kind of cool from just sort of interesting, you know, look back. Mm-hmm. This is something we forgot to post.
The lost episodes.
The only other thing that we never posted was when we brewed the raspberry wheat. Never posted that.
Oh, geez, yeah.
But the Porter show was better anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did the raspberry wheat back in year one.
Yeah.
Back at the townhouse in the winter. And I made a makeshift, I hung up plastic under the deck so it wasn't so windy. And oh my goodness, that was just craziness. Good times.
Yeah, no, it's fun, but probably not worth it. But there's probably a smidgen of good stuff
there.
There's
a few other things we haven't posted. I found some interviews from Saver we never put up on the Zooms again. Uh-huh. I know there's a couple of things I have in a folder somewhere of like lost Joes, like stuff we just never put up. 8 years, you're gonna have some of those.
Yeah, not everything makes it. And I'm, you know, I'm fine with it if it doesn't get put up, the hop show. But I would like to do that again. We don't even have to. We can record it and not post it again. But
right,
it was
just
fun.
Therapy at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we can. I mean. When I found it, I'm like, oh, I should put that up. But I had, like I said, just said it. I don't want to repeat myself. I had a vague recollection of the title, Hop Pickin'. And I'm like, if I remember that so clearly, I must have posted it, but maybe not.
But that's how long it takes two people to make, what's it, a garbage bag full of hops out of five vines?
No, it's probably like nine to 11 binds.
9 to 11 binds, okay. But Jeff was just going to throw them out.
I didn't really have the time.
And I was like, no, we can't throw these out. These are hops.
I'm glad I didn't. But, you know, my favorite night of the year is after hop picking. Setting up the oast in the extra bedroom, turning on the ceiling fan, and sleeping underneath the oast because it smells so good.
But you no longer have that extra bedroom, do you?
Well, Max's old bedroom will be the extra one soon as Heather gets all her consignment sale stuff done. Should be soon. Sale's over. She just needs to clean up and get rid of donate stuff now. So get the bedroom back. We'll have a guest bed, too, at that point. In case you ever need to stay. Yeah, we'll have the guest bed set up again. Hopefully it stays clean and stays a guest room, but that's asking a lot. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
It's funny because, man, like these 2 weeks, it's like, man, I wish we had a show because there's this I want to talk about and that's what I want to talk about.
Now
and
it's you get all here gone. And like,
blah.
Blarg.
Blurred.
Oh, balls. I don't know.
Interesting news stories.
Oh. Did you, BitTorrent Sync, have you heard about this, seen this? BitTorrent Labs just put it out. It's still alpha, but it's, they use the BitTorrent technology but it's kind of like a Dropbox or able to share folders with friends. Hmm. So like when you mentioned, you know, how you can send me files, I just need to open up an FTP. Actually, BitTorrent Sync would probably work better because it's smarter about transferring the stuff. You have a folder, and I have a folder. It's like quantum teleportation, right? Well, no, that's a horrible analogy. It's but you have a folder, you drop your stuff in the folder, and our two computers do BitTorrent-y type transfer to sync it to my computer. So it's really easy to send people huge amounts of data.
Well, between one computer and the other, doing a BitTorrent-y type transfer.
Well, it's not...
Is that sequential? Is that...
No, it syncs the folders, right? It gets the folders into sync. And it can be right. So I can drop files in there, and you can drop files in there. So it's like if you shared a Dropbox folder with me.
So it's a private, but it only really becomes interesting when it's a private network.
Right. It uses BitTorrent's net traversal. You have to open ports or whatever. But it's like if we shared Dropbox folders, but the data is not stored on the Dropbox servers. They're just between us, and it's encrypted. So there's no third party cloud having access to the data. There's no quotas. There's no limits in size.
So we'd share a folder that we put stuff in. I would put stuff in. If you'd see it, you would pull it from me. If I see it there, I'd pull it from
you. Well, you'd put it in, and your client would start sending it to my client and my folder.
Would it send it, or would it only send it if you asked for it?
No, it would start sending it. It syncs the folders.
Okay.
So it would start, like, so if I needed Show X, right? You drop Show X in there, it transfers it over. And like, so I would set up BitTorrent Sync on my media center, right? So it'd be right there, so I could just watch stuff right off the thing if you needed to send me a show or whatnot. So I'll send you some more info on that, but I think I want to set that up. It looks pretty cool.
Sounds similar to a thing Nullsoft did a while ago, where they came up with BitTorrent. Remember Nullsoft, the Winamp guys?
Was it? I didn't know the guy that wrote it, BitTorrent initially was with Nullsoft.
I'm pretty sure. And then he came up with a sort of private network share that you could do, and they AOL had control of the time. They quickly slapped that down, but it sounds similar to that concept.
Yeah, if you go to BitTorrent Labs, you can see they have, you know, the sync, and they have a couple other projects going on. But they have BitTorrent Live, BitTorrent Surf, so that's probably kind of like a onion router type surfing thing, right? But the sync, it's out now, and
BitTorrent is still used for legitimate files. I mean, a great way to serve legitimate files. It also happens to be a great way to serve illegitimate files.
Right.
So, as you have to look at that BitTorrent tech and make sure it's if we wanted to share things that were not necessarily.
But it's peer-to-peer. It doesn't send anything through a tracker or anything like that. It connects directly. So they've set it up so the communication's just from you to me.
It should still be encrypted because
it is
the
encrypted.
ISP can
it
still
is
read
encrypted.
That.
Okay. It is encrypted. It uses AES 192. But it uses the BitTorrent transfer mechanism in the 4 megabyte chunks to transfer the stuff. So that's the only thing really it has inherent. And it can use a tracker to link two people up, but the traffic doesn't go through the tracker or anything like that. So it uses some of the tracker network out there. It can, doesn't have to. And but they use the transfer mode of BitTorrent to transfer these files. And it looks like a great way to, like, I was, you know, I'd love
to. It's like a good way to share, like, between your office and your home computer.
Or between you and me. You know, I've been trying to figure out a good way to do an offsite backup of my stuff, right? And I was thinking I could use rsync. But with rsync, I would need to have someone running an rsync client. But with BitTorrent Tracker, all I can do is I can buy another external enclosure with a 2 terabyte hard drive in it. Give it, you know, sync it up here. Give it to you. Have you plug it in and, you know, sync the folder, right? And so the backups would just always sync to you. Right, in case, and an offsite backup would be in case this place burns down. Mm-hmm. I can just get the hard drive off you, and so BitTorrent's. As I'm starting to set this up, there's going to be two things for us to transfer files, but also I might tap someone like you to be my offsite backup. I'll give you a hard drive to plug in, and you won't have to worry about it. Just keep it running. So
sounds like a cool idea. Damn it. as you were talking, I thought, oh, there was something, but now I'm trying to remember what it was. There was, you know, I brought up a science thing in the main show, and sometimes I get the question, why do you go so crazy about these little science things? Like, I was just in the D&D thing one time, because sometimes you go out of the room when other people are doing it, because you're not supposed, you don't have any idea what's going on with them.
Okay.
And I then somebody, you know, vaguely mentioned the Higgs boson, so I went to a whole big spiel about, oh, this is how it's in. And why am I like that? Why is it that I need to, you know, when I hear somebody say something that I feel is incorrect, why do I need to jump on it? Well, why do we do the show? Why did you do this show?
Why did I do the show? Because someone else, Screwtops, was publishing a beer podcast with misinformation, wrong information, incorrect information, doing a disservice to craft beer.
And you knew that they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew...
They were telling people... The wrong things and sounding authoritative about it.
Yeah. So that's what it is. It's not, I want to express how awesome I am. It's you hear a lot of stuff that is made either easy, like they make it way too easy for what it is, or they're not describing it in a reasonable enough way to. And so when I hear stuff like that, I feel like I have to jump on it and say, okay, they, you know, it's a lot of little half truths. And here's sort of where the truth lies. That's why I have this compulsion to do it when there's a big science story out there. I feel like I have to be okay. Yeah, but I have to correct the certain things. And I throw cold water sometimes on certain things. Like when he said that's sort of like quantum teleportation, I was like, oh, God, no.
I was joking.
I know, you were joking, but... There was something that happened in the past 2 weeks where I got really just upset at how I constantly get upset at how people don't understand evolution. That bugs the hell out of me. Even people who are like evolution proponents, they'll go on about how, hey, it's all about survival of the fittest and like may the strongest survive. And it's like, no, it's not strongest. It's what fits in the best in the circumstances. It could be that a really weak thing is best fit.
If it fills a certain niche, right?
Yeah.
If it's successful in making more of itself.
You know, it's understanding that we talked about it before, how people are taught a certain thing that's sort of wrong in order to get them to basically understand something, and then when they get deeper and deeper, they understand why they were taught slightly wrong in order to figure out what the other parts are. So I think evolution is taught wrong to people initially, and then some people who go off with that, and that's where that whole idiom comes from, you know, a little learning is a dangerous thing. If you only know a little bit about something and then you go out and spout it off, you don't really know what's really behind it. So people who spout off, you know, survival of the fittest and think that, and that's why you had people who misunderstood evolution. You had people doing social Darwinism because, oh, that's how nature is. Well, no, I mean, there is if you look at some very specific situations, there are, yeah, where the strongest survives, but that's not how the situation works broadly. That's that you're looking at very specific cases.
Right. You're looking, well, inside a species, right? Inside a species.
Well, not only that, I mean, but like, okay, so lions are the alpha predator, and they survive because they're stronger than everything else.
No, I think you're interpreting... No, I cannot speak for the person who utters the phrase. But the phrase, the strongest survive, to me is still valid. But you have to limit it to a species, or maybe even a community of the species, right? Because the retarded lion is going to die, and his genes are going to be vanquished, where the strong, smart lions survive.
No, this is wrong, because the quote-unquote retarded lion may... You get to use that because your brother is... you get to use it.
I'm not claiming that ownership. You can be offended. That's fine.
So, a mentally disabled lion will probably not survive, but a lion that is not as weak, that is not as strong as the main pride, may have some other advantage.
I think you're using a really bad example with lions, right? Because the pride, the king, the pride leader, you know, he gets the mate, you know, and the other males, if they don't leave, they don't get to mate. You know, there's very strict in packs. There's a very strict hierarchy, and not all the males get the mate.
But right? You could see it is possible to see a situation where that particular strain of lion will go off in one direction, and another different strain of lions will go off in a different direction based on some mutation in there and some
sure there could be a speciation behavior.
And the similar thing is that if you just use strength, then that's where you get, you know, eugenics and all that stuff from. The people are trying to make the strongest humans are the ones who are obviously... But it's not about strength or necessarily about intelligence. It's about usefulness. And it's about, you know, where things come and, you know, how things work. So the problem was that people were taking one or two aspects and using those as the paragons of evolution, and that's not how it works.
Well, it's... No,
it's
okay,
a much
yeah,
more chaotic
It's not a paragon of the evolution. Strongest survive is more honing a community, honing a species. You know, it's getting rid of the fat, getting rid of the dead weight. But a mutation comes along, right? A mutation has nothing to do with... A mutation is more central to the theory of evolution. Mutations happen.
People have a misunderstanding of mutations too. Like you said, when you said, you know, the retard line, people have an understanding of mutations. Think of a mutation makes something totally
worse. No,
mutations don't happen necessarily to individuals. With evolution, you're talking about populations. You're not talking about individuals.
Well, when you're trying things randomly, most oftentimes they fail, right?
Yes.
So. A lot more retarded lines.
Yes,
than
but
lines.
But I mean, like speciation things can be the as simple as a slight changing of skin coloration that then slowly turns into a much different coloration between one and another over a long period of time. It can turn into things like fins developing eventually into limbs with phalanges. This is just a long period of time where populations change. And it's a very slow process.
Right. So I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I do. I'm trying to figure out like what that means. How does that fit in? I don't know. I can't get my head around the whole... I can't get my head around the parts where I want to communicate what you're saying differently.
We can think about it. But I mean, the idea is like some fish got stronger fins because they were sifting through dirt, maybe. And so their fins got stronger. And so they became less useful for swimming and more useful for sifting. And over time... They became maybe a little bit more flexible because that was more successful at sifting. And then they actually became useful for pushing them up. And then that actually turned into they could out of water for brief periods of time.
So, you know, the payoff wasn't until step 10,000, right?
Well, the payoff was the payoff was instantaneous, but the payoff, it depends on where do you look at payoff.
Right. But like, okay, but they had a mutation, they found a niche, right? But it wasn't, it didn't.
There's no goal.
The goal wasn't to outcompete your cousin. It was, you know, you found a niche. And then later on, you became, you know,
you keep
able
finding
to,
more niches. Yeah. You keep finding niches in which you can exploit something that hasn't been exploited.
Yeah,
yet.
You're not out. I mean, well, when with mutations, you're not. So that's where I was trying to get to with mutations and evolution. You know, what I see as more of a more cornerstone part of evolution. It's not about outcompeting. It's about finding niches, right?
Right.
Where, but there's the other side, which I do agree with the strongest, the survival of the fittest, right? Where inside a community, inside a species, there is competition amongst them. For the resources,
yes, but that not that may not necessarily
that
mean,
hones the species.
That may not necessarily mean strength. Strength may not necessarily be the attribute that is the thing that is selected for fitness.
But the most well adapted of the species doesn't flow as good, or the strong survival of the most well adapted doesn't sound like survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest is right, but as long as you don't take survival of the fittest to mean the strongest survive. Mm-hmm. Right. Those are two different things entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Survival of the fittest, yes. The strongest survive? No. That's not how evolution works. Because fitness is not... Fitness doesn't come from on high. Fitness and comes
fittest,
from below.
Fittest is not fitness. Fittest is... Fittest, survival of the fittest.
Fittest is best able to exploit whatever niche.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. So that's where, you know, a whole lot of misunderstandings of evolution come in. And that's why you have people saying, well, you know, if you get to use evolution, then why shouldn't we kill all people who are disabled? And it's like, that's not what evolution says.
No, that's what an economist would go over. Because here's the numbers. Look at all the money we'd save.
We also have to also recognize that we live in a society where doing that is detrimental to society. Yep. And where people can contribute to society in ways that don't necessarily involve them necessarily having to have full use of their right arm, for instance.
There's that. There's also the whole community thing, right? Society's more productive overall if you don't have to worry about people running around massacring other people.
Yes.
Generally, you know, something about having these laws to make us safe makes everyone more productive.
That's sort of the idea that there are moral absolutes in human terms. As long as we're confining it to humanity, there are sort of things that we can say are morally correct or morally not correct.
Well, I think it kind of goes to morals or not. I mean, do clans of gorillas have morals?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, but it's like they're more productive when they have the community where, you know, yeah. And if there is a bad guy gorilla, you know,
mm-hmm.
They take care of him.
But the thing is the situation where, you know, if you're stranded on a desert island, morals don't matter. If there's nobody around you, then morals are not
if you're not important. not in a community.
Yeah, if you're not in a community, then morals aren't important. If you're in a community, then how you deal with the community is important.
That's funny how morals rise out of community.
Is it funny? Or is it just... everything is...
No, it's not har-har funny. It's like, okay, so... desert island, you're the only human.
Mm-hmm.
You're the only... So, you know, you're not killing cute things, right? Like monkeys. Or not, like chimpanzees and orangutans and whatnot, right?
On a desert island?
Well, jungle island, okay? But, like, you know, like, so the moral, like, you're there by yourself, you know, like, what could you do that could be considered amoral, right? It's like, as long as you're not, like, sadistically massacring chimpanzees, you know, like...
If there's no society with which to be a sort of arbiter of morals, or at least
I guess they're still there, right? Because you could be like, so where's that breakdown? I mean, I guess it would be amoral to got a pool full of fish, you throw a stick of dynamite in there, and just take glee in their demise. Them.
If you feel that fish belong in the same moral circle as you do, then perhaps. But but I mean,
well, if you're taking glee in their demise, that's kind of a little twisted compared to just, you know.
But I'm sure you feel fine when you slap a fly is buzzing around, just doing its thing, being a fly. Yeah. Is this fish doing its thing, doing it being a fish?
Yeah, you're right. I don't take glee in slapping fly. Well, maybe I do sometimes. Depends how annoying they are, right? If he's really buzzing around, he won't buzz off. I'll take glee in his demise. Yeah, morals are tricky.
Morals are a tricky subject, but...
Because I think maybe it comes all down because that whole community thing, you know, human community, we want to be safe so we don't have to be looking over our shoulders all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're casting that onto fish in a pond.
Right.
And we're casting that onto...
Yeah, I mean, one of the big faults in humans have is we personify everything. I did the example with Steve the pencil.
You broke my Steve.
Where as soon as you know, if it was just a pencil and I cracked, you're like, you cracked a pencil. Once I named it Steve... it was a thing. And that's just...
It was a good pencil even before you was Steve.
And that's just what we do. You can buy other pencils.
You can.
But you can't
but
buy
I
Steve.
Had a pencil. But I had a pencil.
Yeah, exactly. You can't buy that one again. Can you?
No, just... I had a pencil. Now I have one less pencils because you had to make an example of Steve.
Steve was... That was Steve's destiny, his fate.
But I have all these dried up pens and things. You could have broke one of them. Why'd you have to break a functional pencil, you motherfucker?
I had to make my point.
You could have named a worthless pen Frank and broke him.
It would not have been a stronger point, though, right? I mean, the fact that you are lamenting the loss
of
Steve.
No, I'm lamenting the loss of a good pencil. I forgot his name was Steve.
Now, a little bit of you died inside.
I'm not sure. I was that attached to Steve.
He sounded like it.
I was attached to the pencil. I have one less pencil. I'm one pencil closer to buying more pencils.
Oh, no.
Well, it's something. It's a resource. You've flitted away one of my resources.
I flagrantly violated your... your space.
Oh, did you hear the latest Neil deGrasse Tyson Cosmic Queries or whatever, where they're talking about mining asteroids?
No.
Good stuff. I forget the dude's name. Dude that started the XPRIZE. He has a company.
Okay, right.
To mine asteroids.
Right, yeah, I heard about that, right.
And, you know, they're working on it.
Elon Musk, is that?
No, he's SpaceX.
He's SpaceX, okay.
No, it's some dude you probably wouldn't recognize his name, but he started the XPRIZE. He has a company, hired a bunch of people away from JPL, and it's a couple phases. They're going to build some satellites that orbit the Earth with telescopes, and they find asteroids. Next phase, after that, is to build some satellites that will go to the asteroid and survey it and put a beacon on it. And then third phase...
Capture.
...is to extract resources and return them to... Well, there's two different kinds of asteroids they're looking at. They're looking at the ones that have the platinum metals group or whatever, with palladium and platinum and rubidium and things like that. Those are the ones that are valuable. But, you know, in space, something else is also valuable. They're looking for the ones that have a lot of water in the asteroids. And they're going to take those and they're going to make rocket fuel, which is hydrogen, oxygen.
Right.
So they'll have these depots, all these gas stations floating around the inner solar system. You know, so that's kind of the two-pronged approach. Now, what they do with the platinum and stuff that they mine, whether they bring it back to Earth to make things or they make things in space, you know, that's kind of, you know, wherever it, you know, when and where. But he had some interesting things to say, you know, talking about how, you know, every expansion of, you know, human exploration and thing. It was driven by resources or land, you know, mostly resources. And, you know, so they were trying to find it out. He called it, you know, how can we make this space thing like an exothermic reaction, you know, make it pay off more money than mm-hmm. you put into it. And, you know, so that's what he's going for. And, Neil deGrasse Tyson, it was an interesting thing. I forget how he worded it, but he's talking about, you know, maybe we'll see our, but you know, they're talking about how to come out. Basically, we'll probably see our first trillionaires in, you know, space. You know, the first trillionaire will be someone who does something like mines asteroids and shit. They were talking about, it was just really fascinating. You should check it out.
I know there's a NASA, there was recently, they put out a NASA plan for capturing an asteroid and bringing it into Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
So for...
Then we'll have two moons.
Well,
big moon and a teeny tiny moon.
I don't think it works quite that way. Because if you were to call that a moon, you call everything that we put in orbit a moon, and that's lots of stuff.
What would be a natural satellite? Would it be a natural satellite or an artificial satellite?
It would, since we pulled it in artificially, it didn't
get
there.
But it's made of natural material.
It's made of natural materials, but we put it in there artificially. So it's
a hybrid. Very fuel efficient.
But so it did not get into there via natural processes. We, you know. Getting another moon would be a hard problem, because that's a hard three-body problem to get another moon on the Earth.
I wonder what the largest natural thing behind the moon is orbiting the Earth. I wonder, like, what size? Like,
oh, I think there are a couple Trojan asteroids that they've, you know, found, like the L4, L5, Lagrange points.
Those are the ones that are, like, behind, like, chasing after Earth and in front of
Earth? Yeah, they're at 60 degrees.
Okay. Oh, those ones. Okay. So those are the Earth, Moon, and Lagrange points.
The Earth, Moon isn't really a stable Earth, Sun.
So they kind of chase the Earth, then, those ones. Yeah, that cluster of chaser ones. Yeah, but no, I'm like, what's in orbit? I wonder what the largest thing behind the Moon that's in orbit around the Earth naturally is. That's something we have to look up.
The largest thing behind the Moon...
Like, how big is it? Is it?
Oh,
there's got to be something.
Okay, as you're saying.
There's got to be a rock orbiting the Earth.
What is the... So the Moon is obviously the most massive thing that is orbiting the Earth.
Naturally.
Yes. What is the...
Next
most massive thing that's orbiting the Earth?
We don't have two moons, so it's not something that's big. But there has to be something. And how small is it, you know? Is it 100 feet across, or is it... 10 feet across, or is it the size of a football? You know, like, how big is it?
Well, I think they recently identified that there was a second moon, but then they found, oh, no, it's actually it's orbiting the sun. It just comes close to the Earth. So it's weird, because the problem is that the moon and the Earth are big enough to perturb most...
Oh, maybe it cleans out the system, right?
Yeah.
Like, kind of like how planets clean out their orbit. So then there's another question is, like, what's the biggest thing orbiting the moon? You know, so natural thing.
I don't think that there's anything that's in a stable orbit around the moon. I don't think it's possible. Because the Earth is has too strong a pull on it, and the moon has an uneven gravitational field.
I'm talking of any size, though. You know, golf ball... grain of sand, you know.
Oh, probably.
I mean, what's the largest thing?
But probably one of our satellites that we put up there.
Natural thing, though.
Oh, natural thing, I don't know. Right. But anything that we put up there is unstable by its very nature. So you can't... So it will either orbit the moon briefly and then become a solar object, or impact the moon.
Well, I'm just curious. That's some research I'm going to look up. What's the largest thing orbiting the Earth behind the moon? And what's the largest thing orbiting the moon? Just has to be... I don't know. Hopefully it's documented. If not, I just became a... Or there's a research project,
there
right?
There you go.
I've just become an astronomer. If I actually work on it, I've become an astronomer. If no one's answered that question.
It'd be a hard thing to answer, because you'd have to... Really, the best way to do it would be to put something in orbit behind the moon, right? In of the Earth Moon system.
Well, when I say behind, I mean less massive than the moon.
But no, I mean if you were to put something in, you'd have to put it into like L3, so the moon is always between the Earth, so that way the sun wouldn't get in the way. So you should be able to then use an infrared detector to find something that's glowing as it orbits.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of physics involved, right? Theoretically, you know, what's the largest thing that could be captured? Like, they don't even know how the moon was captured. There's some theories, but they're not sure. And, like, the most popular theory of, you know, 5-8 years ago is kind of slightly debunked now. It's not very probable anymore, so...
There are considerable questions to answer about the giant impact. I think giant impact is still the...
Even the double impact, you know, is like the Mars-sized protoplanet that impacted the Earth and had to come in and hit us twice to get thing it did now. That last I heard, just, you know, a couple weeks ago, that's not as likely as they had thought a couple years ago.
There are reasons why that may not be true, but there's no definitive answer, and it's hard to get a definitive answer.
Yeah, so like coming in on a theory, I'm like, okay, what's the largest other thing that could be captured? They don't even know how the biggest thing was captured, you know, let alone like what else could be captured. But there has to be some research, some observations on other things that, I don't know, or at least saying we are N% sure there is not something over 100 feet orbiting, you know, like that kind of thing. Yeah, N feet orbiting the Earth, you know.
Well, I think I think if you did the math, you could find that number because of the dynamics of the Sun, Moon, Earth system. You could find a certain number where after a certain mass, it would be thrown out of the system.
All right, I got to pee. You got anything else you need to say?
No, I think that's good.
All right, cool. We out.
We out.